Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
I'm upset about what this president has done to our city and our democracy. I'm upset that my police officers were put in harm's way when they were just doing their jobs. And I'm even upset that somebody died in that building who was breaking into the building. I'm upset that 706,000 residents of the District of Columbia did not have a single vote in that Congress yesterday, despite the fact that our people were putting their lives on the line to protect our democracy.
As D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser said today, there is a lot to be upset about when we look back at yesterday's terror attack on the U.S. Capitol. It opened our eyes to the vulnerabilities of the buildings and the institutions in this city that should be most protected. Yesterday, they were not. Well, tonight, we are talking about defending against enemies, foreign and domestic, and the failure to do both yesterday. My guests are Ron Hampton, former executive director of the National Black Police Association and member of the D.C. Justice Collaborative, and Janice Lewis-George, Ward 4 D.C. Council member. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Ron, thanks for joining the program.
Thank you. Good to see you. Happy New Year.
A Happy New Year to you. And Councilmember George, thank you so much for joining us on the program. Good to have you on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Ron, let me start with you. You've been around D.C. for a long time. You've seen how things should and should not work when it comes to protecting this city. Talk to me about what happened yesterday. Where were the biggest failures? What happened?
Well, I think there was a huge security failure because they didn't properly plan for it. They just was very easygoing because the demonstrators were white, and there's no way to get around that, because if it had been Black Lives Matter or black folk press or black folk protesting about something that was affecting them and their community, they would have had all kinds of police out there. And I'm talking the Capitol Police, and they would have had U.S. Paw Police. They would have had everybody, and probably, depending on where they came from or where they were, Metropolitan would have been involved in it. So it was a huge security failure. They just didn't do their job, and they were very relaxed. I don't doubt that there were sympathizers up there. The chief of police of the Capitol Hill Police and those individuals that were taking pictures with them sympathized with what it was that this administration stands for and what they have been doing for the last 4 years, because this isn't something that just started this week or last week. This is something that's been going on for the whole time that this guy has been in office. Mm-hmm. And so now we've seen a you can't demonstrate any more than what we saw yesterday, the double standard in this country when it comes to criminal justice and law enforcement in particular.
Well, late today, the chief of the Capitol Police said he is going to be resigning on January 16th, and that the House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, she indeed asked for his resignation. And earlier today, there was a whole lot of explaining, but there didn't seem to be a full understanding of just what happened. From the perspective of the district council member, you know, kind of give us the rundown of, you know, how the Metropolitan Police works in conjunction with, you know, federal police officials, because a lot of people really don't understand how that works.
Yeah, so, you know, the Metropolitan Police Department is separate and apart from the Capitol Police Department, as well as the Parks and Recreation, as well as many of the other law enforcement agencies that we have. And so Metropolitan Police Department, you know, does not have that authority on federal grounds we do, you know, in outside of the enclave of what you would consider the Capitol grounds and in Congress. And so yesterday for the district, In many ways, we saw a painful reminder that D.C.'s lack of statehood undermines our ability to protect our city and our country. And that's why it must be prioritized, because we could not call on our mayor doesn't have the same power as governors of states to call on the National Guard, D.C. National Guard, and employ them. She has to wait to get the approval for that to happen. And so that delay that comes out of the fact that we don't have statehood, right, you know, absolutely contributed to our inability to be able to protect and assist in what we saw yesterday, which is it was an attempted coup by a violent mob that sought to overturn the results of our fair, secure presidential election.
Council member, the mayor ran off a laundry list of things that upset her.
Mm-hmm.
What upset you about yesterday? And from your perspective as a council member, what moving forward do you believe needs to be done to make sure that this kind of thing does not happen again?
Yeah, so many things upset me yesterday. I think, you know, the lack of planning, not even the lack of planning, the intentional or purposeful lack of planning. Because, you know, what we have to understand is that the current, powers that be that are in place, they knew what was coming, you know. So it wasn't like the Department of Defense did not know what was happening. People had been announcing it on Twitter, on Reddit. They're coming to storm the house. They were coming. And so if we knew that they had intention, and not if we knew, they knew the intentions were to come and storm Congress, why did we not have a plan in place? Why was the National Guard not in place? You know, and what made me most upset, and many people in the city most upset, is that we had just come from all summer having the National Guard during every single protest, George Floyd protest, BLM protest. There were tanks. I'm talking army tanks, armed men with guns all over, lined up when, you know, we saw, when they assumed that we were going to be a threat to, you know, because we were the Black Lives Matter protesters. And so I think the thing that was most disappointing was not only was there an intentional failure to plan, there also was a huge display of white privilege in the history that comes out of the history of this nation, in that we saw a disparate treatment of protesters here that we have never seen, you know, that we, especially coming out of the summer, know well that they had the ability to protect the Capitol, to protect Congress, and they did not do it. And so it's the failure of leadership, but not just a failure. And in many ways, it appears and feels to be very intentional that they were not prepared, and that protesters did not just storm the Capitol. They were let into the Capitol.
Yeah.
And I think that was the thing that made most people angry, because we know First Amendment protests here in the district. We know it very well. We know peaceful protests. We know what that looks like. But these weren't protesters here. These were, you know, terrorists who were ready to take down our democracy. And that failure, I think, made me most angry, especially in light of what just happened this past week, right? Literally, Jacob Blake, you know, we just saw Jacob Blake happen on, I want to say it was Tuesday. You know, I just said, you know, the time and time again, we see that de-escalation, respect for our lives and accountability for those who don't apply to Black people. And then here we saw, you know, the people who stormed the Capitol and were inside of there. When they were leaving, they were holding their hands, walking them out, opening the door out. There's no way that treatment would have happened to Black Lives Matter protesters. So, you know, once again, it also just showed us that the de-escalation, you know, it doesn't just apply, you know, it's not that they cannot de-escalate or restrain themselves. It's they can restrain themselves against certain people, and those people don't look like the Black and brown residents of the District of Columbia.
Ward 4 D.C. Council Member Janice Lewis-George, I know we only have a short bit of time with you. But thank you so much for participating in the program and continue to stay safe. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about yesterday's attack on the U.S. Capitol. Defending enemies, foreign and domestic. It wasn't done yesterday. Let me go to the phone lines. Jordan, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I totally agree with Ms. Janice about this being an intention.
Whoops, we lost her. Give us a call back if you can. Let's go to... Let's give her a call back if you can. Let's go
can you hear me?
Are you there?
Yes.
Okay, please go right ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just saying, I agree that this is an intentional lack of planning, and it's very dangerous to have this narrative that the police were overwhelmed and they didn't know what to do and they were waiting on orders when we all saw, like they said, this a very different response in the summer. But I think what this exposes for us and really makes very clear is that there are more individuals in positions of power like law enforcement in the Senate, in our Congress, everywhere that actually agree with Trump and Trumpism, and working together, they all allowed this to happen to our country, to our U.S. Capitol. Nobody thinks that it is that easy to walk into the rotunda. We're not stupid. So
yeah.
They had to have been let in. They had to. There's things that had to have happened. And that kind of insurgency takes planning. It doesn't happen overnight. And I think that that's what's really sad and hurtful, is that not only was this a different response, but it was something that was collectively done, a collective attack. So I'm really glad that people are resigning who we feel are responsible. I think we need to actively kind of comb the infection, carve the infection out of all of these agencies, because we can't have this happen. Just like you said, we have to fight terrorism, both domestic and international, and we tend to focus more on international than domestic, but this is an example of why we need to stop.
Thank you so much, Jordan. I appreciate it. Let me ask you this, Ron, because as Jordan just suggested, this kind of attack, this insurgency on the U.S. Capitol and more broadly our democracy, this didn't happen overnight. There had been tweets from the president as early as the second week of December inviting his supporters to come on the 6th of January, on the day that the Electoral College certification was to happen. So here's the thing that I need to ask you. And, you know, I'm not one for conspiracy theories or any of that kind of stuff, but I have to ask, is it at all possible that the chief of the Capitol Police received a stand-down order from on high, whatever that may mean, above his head from someone? Do you believe that that happened, or that kind of thing may have happened, that would have prevented the U.S. Capitol Police from being more aggressive with these people who attacked the Capitol?
Let me tell you what I believe. That is very possible that could have happened. But what I believe is that in our society, there's systemic racism. And even if we're rewarded with, after all the hard work that's been going on in this city for years, if we have statehood doesn't address the systemic racism that exists in our society. And what happens a lot of times is that, and especially in this situation that we just witnessed yesterday, there were sympathizers in the U.S. Capitol Police with what it was that those rioters was there for. So all they did was stand aside. They just let it happen because they had something in common, and it's their whiteness. It's that privilege, the white privilege that goes along with it. And that's why it's important that we talk about the systemic racism in our society, along with the other things that need to be done, like statehood, like dealing with systemic racism, like professionalizing the Capitol Hill Police, because you know, and I know that some time ago, there was a time when all you had to do to get on the Capitol Hill Police Force was know a senator or a congressman. Mm-hmm. And even though now today they have a testing process, if you know a senator or a congressman and they sent you to the office to join the department, more than likely you're going to get on the department. And so there's still that political taste that exists in that department when it comes to some of these issues. So they wasn't as professional as they needed to be because, for example, I've been out for a while, but I would have had two perimeters, and the perimeters would have been at least a couple of miles away from the Capitol. In no way would I not had those fences up there to prevent, because 2 weeks ago, if you had tried to go to the Capitol, you couldn't have gone into the front door. You couldn't have gone on the steps, and you couldn't have gone in the side.
Mm-hmm. Hold that point, Ron. Hold your point, because I've got to take a break, and I want to let our listeners know, William from Southeast D.C., we're going to be talking to you. EJ, calling from Richmond, Virginia, we're also going to talk to you, so please do not hang up. And here is a reminder, of course, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. It's posted on our website after 8:30, but check this out. If you want to listen to it live, you can do that too. You can download the Quiet Storm app to your smartphone, and you can hear this program from 7 to 8 p.m. without that drop-off at 7:30. And, of course, all the Quiet Storm music as well. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This discussion continues on Sirius XM in 5 seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about defending against enemies, foreign and domestic, and the failure to do both. Yesterday, we're taking a look in the wake of the attack on the U.S. Capitol. My guests are Ron Hampton, former executive director of the National Black Police Association and member of the D.C. Justice Collaborative. Also joining us now, Patrice Sultan, executive director of the D.C. Justice Lab. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Go ahead and finish your point, Ron, real quick.
I was finishing the point about that on the normal circumstances, you just couldn't get in there. But, and then when we have the kind of situation that we've had here where there's protests going on, that should have been the case all along. But if you know that, if intelligence tells you that the kind of things that's been going on now for some time, because this isn't a new issue, this is something that's been going on for the last couple of years of reference, this administration, and particularly with the national elections that just took place on November 3rd, then it wasn't poor planning. There was no planning.
Mm-hmm.
But that was because the protesters were white, because if it was black, that wouldn't have never been the setup, or that wouldn't have never been allowed.
Patrice, thank you so much for joining the program.
Thank you for having me.
Talk to me about the optics of yesterday, where you had almost all white men, a few white women, and from the photographs we've seen, maybe one or two black people. But the optics seem to be very clear. But from your perspective, what was going on?
Yeah, I think the contrast between how they police white people and how they police black people was a hard part to watch yesterday. But the failure to protect the Capitol building is also a problem. Everything that happened sends a message about our priorities, sends a message about our vulnerabilities as a nation. It sends a message about our values and our beliefs. When you let them into our Senate chamber, when you let them literally steal our national secrets. And so those are troubling aspects of the optics in my view as well.
One of the things that we've kind of heard today, one of the reasons why the members of the House and the Senate were particularly, even people on the right, were more apt to allow the Electoral College vote to go forward, is that this breach happened to them. It didn't happen in some other part of D.C. It didn't happen in some other part of the country. It happened in their workspace. It happened in the People's House. It happened because these insurrectionists, these terrorists, these rioters literally came in their house. Talk to me about how you believe that that may make a difference going forward? Or is this just going to be one of those things where, you know, after a couple of days, everybody's going to go right back to their same way of thinking on the left, on the right, et cetera?
I think this is a change. I don't think that we've seen that kind of a breach before. And those of us who expected them to try to do this, I think many of us were still surprised that they let it happen, that we think of these spaces in our city as spaces that are revered by people all over the country and known to people all over the world. And to have them desecrate it the way they did was unprecedented. And I think that a real reset is going to be required to restore the kind of respect we had before they allowed this. I think insurrectionist is an appropriate term, but anyone else who tried to do something like this, we'd be calling them thugs, we'd be calling them vandals, we'd be calling them the same kinds of denigrating terms that we hear the police use about Black people in the city every day. And I think, not that I think it's fitting to use those terms about anyone, but I think it's important to note the contrast there as well.
We do have some breaking news to share with you. We are getting several reports now that a U.S. Capitol Police officer has died after yesterday's riot at the U.S. Capitol. We don't have a lot of information about this person or how he was injured or the kind of injuries, but he is now the fifth person to die. Yesterday, there was a woman from San Diego who was shot by a Capitol Police officer. She died. Also, there were three other people who died as a result of medical emergencies. But again, this breaking news, a U.S. Capitol Police officer dies as a result of injuries sustained during yesterday's riot. Certainly, our thoughts and prayers are with him. I need to go back to the phone lines. Let me go to EJ. EJ, calling from Richmond, Virginia. Thank you for calling, EJ. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you. Two points. I'm going to try to be really, really quick.
Sure.
First thing I would say is, in regard to the president and this whole issue of the fairness of the election and this idea that he was robbed, one person, one vote is really what's at stake here and what really should be concentrated on, because the election was different because of COVID, and you had all the mail-in voting, you had all the absentee voting, where people that usually maybe didn't vote, voted this time. And the Republicans have a strategy to suppress the vote, and that's how they win. So what the Democrats have to do is stay focused on one person, one vote, and that will mean better chances. The other thing is, don't buy coincidence and don't buy a failure of leadership with these events at the Capitol. It took pre-planning and a lot of collaboration for this to occur. And I don't trust this alliance between Trump and law enforcement where white privilege is involved. Everybody should be deposed. All the staff, all the law enforcement should be investigated with Senate hearings to be fully accountable. This was not a coincidence.
Thank you so much, EJ. You know, the mayor has asked for a bipartisan commission to examine that. There have also been discussions on the Hill about the same thing. Patrice, your thoughts about that. Do you think that's the way to go? Will we find out anything if there is a bipartisan commission, for example, or House hearings for that matter?
I mean, I find myself frustrated by the attention on what we do after police misconduct. Instead of talking about the parameters and the standards that we hold for police while they're on the job, we cannot bring those five people back. And an investigation is going to use considerable time and resources. And while that might be warranted, I think people should appreciate the fact that the failure to protect already happened. And we can't fix that on the back end. And we can't keep focusing our attention on what do we do to discipline and prosecute and investigate and not talk about what the expectations are going to be in real time. So I hope that they do come up with some solutions as a result of the investigation. But to me, it seems like a very unsatisfying outcome after the breach already occurred.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. El Shabazz calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. Yes. What's on your mind?
Oh, yes, please. Just a couple of things I'd like to say. We must keep in mind that many of these officers are white supremacists, Ku Klux Klan, skinheads, Nazis. I remember back way, way back 1967, when the officials from Washington, D.C. would come down to Camp Lejeune to recruit the Marines. Now, we had just come back from Vietnam combat, and they would give us a 30-day early out of the Marine Corps if we agreed to come to D.C. and be a police. So we went from the jungles and killing of Vietnam in less than 1 year to patrolling the black neighborhood. Also, I would like to say this to all the mayors in the United States of America. The mayors have a lot of power in their hands when it comes to police departments. These things where the police can kill you and you can't talk to them for a week or 2 weeks, you can't take a blood test and all this stuff, all this is agreed to in the contracts that the mayors sign off on. The mayors need to stop signing off on these contracts when they know the people do not want it. The mayors also have to hold the police departments accountable for these things that they're doing that is not right. And someone said, what hurt you? What made you feel bad about yesterday? I felt bad when I looked at how the policemen inside the Capitol was tussling with these people. And they are tussling, they're pushing the police. Somebody threw something in one of the black police eyes in the Capitol building, if you saw that tussle that was going on. And it hurts you because the police are getting away with saying, oh, we shot him 7 times because he had a knife.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I can go on and on. You get my drift.
I do. So, well, El Shabazz, thank you. I appreciate your phone call. One thing I do want to ask Ron that El Shabazz just brought up when he was talking about just where police officers are in their own protections when these kinds of things happen. But I don't want to talk about municipal police. I want to talk about the Capitol Hill police, because that's a different animal from what you understand. Do they have some of those same kinds of protections? The police chief of the District of Columbia, Robert Conti, he said yesterday that a Capitol Hill police officer shot and killed that woman yesterday, and that they are investigating. Should we expect a slow, difficult, drawn-out process with this, or should this just be kind of straight to the point and what?
It's going to be like all the other cases in the district and that happened, because the Metropolitan Police Department has the authority to do the investigation, even though it happened on ground. The Homicide Division is going to do it. So there's going to be an investigation, and it may be drawn out like there are other investigations that happen. We haven't gotten information or a decision on anything as it relates to it. So some of those investigations are in the office with the auditor of the District of Columbia, Kathy Patterson. So it can be, it may not be as long as simply because of the circumstances surrounding it, but it has a tendency to last that long. But Harold, let me say this. I think that there's going to be some changes, because the reason that we have a visitor center, that all of the visitors to the Capitol had to go through that place underground there, mm-hmm. is because of what had happened in the past. I was around in 1958 when the Puerto Ricans came up and shot up the chamber. And that's why there's a police department up in there, that people carry guns, because they didn't carry
the inside police didn't carry guns at one time. So the changes, see, it's like if a burglar breaks in your house and trespasses in your house, more than likely because it's personal, there's some things that you're gonna do to protect yourself and fix what happened so you won't have that trespass again. Because you had mentioned how personal this one is, because it affected the senators and the staffers and all that kind of stuff and the Congress people. Oh, it's going to be some changes up there. You better bet it's going to be some changes.
Interesting.
Because it's personal. It's them. But the real change that we need in this society, in this city, is to deal with the issue of systemic racism, which allowed the white people to walk into the Capitol and do the things that they did and felt as though that they could do that and then just walk out after they've done it. Because black folk, even though they lined up the police and the National Guards and all that when the Black Lives Matter was protesting, that wouldn't have never crossed their mind because they just know that that would have been something that they probably, if they attempted to do it, they would have met with deadly force. So they're not going to do that. But white folk can do that in America because this is their America. They possessed, they owned it. And so even after all of these changes, then you watch what I'm saying. I'm not indifferent to nothing that nobody said. But there's going to be some changes because that's not going to happen again down there.
Well,
but it will happen again if we don't deal with the issue that white folk can just walk in and do anything they want to do. And we have to deal with the issue of racism in our society because that's what allowed that to happen.
And Patrice, I want to throw this out to you because there's also been some discussion about this. And as this was happening, first of all, yesterday, when we were reporting on that, before they stormed the door, and I spoke about this yesterday on the program, I think the thing that really surprised me was I was thinking to myself, if you folks go in, it's over. Because as a native Washingtonian and just having, you know, covered D.C., you kind of know that there are certain things that you just don't do on Capitol Hill. I mean, if you drive up there and you make a wrong turn, somebody is going to stop you. And if you get too close, they may stop you with their hand on a gun, in holstered or not. And so, you know, Patrice, if you try to breach that door, chances are, at least it was my belief, that you were going to get shot. And I think that was the thing that surprised me. Certainly would not want to wish that on anyone. But it made me very nervous because I just thought those folks were going to get mowed down.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly have the manpower, the weaponry, the training to do that. I've seen the Capitol Police throw somebody in jail because they had a keychain they thought was too pointy.
Right.
But this is the first time that we've seen that double standard. A few years ago, the council was considering a bill that would have made it sort of fine eligible, post and forfeit eligible, where you pay a fine and without any admission of guilt for having an unregistered firearm or unregistered ammunition that would have applied only to out-of-towners coming into our city. And the whole point was to protect people who were coming in from out of town, who were on the hill, and they were explicit about the fact that it wouldn't apply to Black D.C. residents who get charged with gun offenses all the time, who is extremely harshest in the country. And so to watch the open carrying into the building was the most appalling part to me yesterday.
And, of course, the issue that happened some 8 years or so ago, Miriam Carey, the dental hygienist from Connecticut, who was shot and killed. She was,
that's exactly right,
you know, having, from, you know, the report, she was having some mental health issues, but she was in a car. Her child was in the back seat, and she was killed. And she was, you know, this was, you know, Capitol Police. This was not, you know, an assault. This was a person in distress, obviously. And you know, we can go on and people can say, well, that was just one person. She was in a car. Cars considered a weapon. Okay. But when you have people who are obviously being aggressive to one of the great seats of power in this country in a political climate that is fraught with hostility, I'm just surprised that more people were not hurt during the main surge through those doors. I'm going to go back go ahead. Please go ahead real quick.
I don't think bloodshed was the only possible response. I mean, the fact is, even when we see peaceful protesters, you've seen what they do. They kettle people together. They have a mass arrest. They have ways of arresting and disarming people without firing on them, without letting them get nearly that close to the building in the first place. And so while I think it's shocking to people that they didn't open fire, there was a lot they could do before it got that critical and that violent and that dangerous in the first place to protect the perimeter of the building.
Yeah. Let me go back to the phone lines. Reggie calling from Richmond, Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Happy New Year. What really troubles me during the press conference of the mayor and also the acting police chief, they talked about some of these terrorists going to local hotels and celebrating that he just came from a football game. That's number one. Number two, they talked about the over $100 million bill that's still outstanding to the D.C. community from the government from previous events. And the last thing I want to point out, it's interesting to me that the occupier of the White House was running around here giving medals. But where's the outrage, and how come the 25th Amendment has not been implemented? Because this guy is definitely a terrorist. Please be safe, D.C. You guys take care.
Reggie, thank you so much. He said a mouthful right there. When the mayor mentioned that $100 million that was still owed for protection during the inauguration, that really stuck in my craw. I mean, it really did, because even though pre-pandemic D.C. was pretty flush with money, $100 million could go a long way in this city for helping underserved communities, housing, health, and I could go on and on and on. And so, yes, I agree with him in that regard. Let me go to Johnson, calling from Silver Spring. Johnson, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I most certainly can. Go right ahead.
Hey, Don, I'm Larry Johnson out of Silver Spring.
Yes, sir.
I think that, you know, that everything, this entire incident has to do with the president. He basically invoked it, but when it came down to him speaking to the American people, the president hid like a little coward that he is. Nobody ever calls him that, but it is what it is, and he's a coward. I mean, he was in hiding. You know, people lost their lives, and, you know, it's not right. In fact, he never should have really been in office. He probably bought the presidency from Putin. And this is how I feel. You know, I cannot wait for him to get out of the office. You know, I cannot wait.
Well, Johnson, thank you so much. I appreciate it. I will say that one of the things that was really interesting yesterday was, you know, considering the president said, you know, we're going to walk down to the Capitol and I'm going to be with you. And then he didn't. And that was a mastery of manipulation, Patrice, I must say. You all going ahead. I'll be right there. And it is just unfortunate in the way that it turned out. But again, it just seemed to be so manipulative. And one of the things that we have seen the president do quite well is manipulate, misdirect to his advantage. I think the thing that has happened, that it has backfired not only on him, but also on his party. But now it leaves the rest of us, Ron, to clean up the mess that was left behind and try to figure out in this Monday morning quarterbacking how law enforcement can fix this. And how about this, Ron? If you are a member of the House or a member of the Senate, even with the chief of police of Capitol Hill Police resigning, I would have a great deal of pause about whether or not, you know, some of these people in uniform would be willing to protect me, considering what happened yesterday.
Well, that's very true. I mean, with the Capitol Hill Police, you're absolutely right. And that's why there's a real, for me, that there's a need to even more professionalize that force and get it out of the hands of the this committee that's made up of senators and congressmen and the civilian overseer of it. And really professionalize the force like most police departments in this country, because the whole issue about can you trust them? Is it possible? Is it going to work? Those kind of things. Yeah. And they had to bring somebody in. So there's a lot of things that reference to the police that need to happen, and they need to deal with that. And that's not going to be easy. I just think that Biden and his administration, he's chosen some people that I think are going to come in ready to go to work on day one, and organizations and individuals like myself are going to be reaching out to work with those people, because there's a lot of damage that has gone on in the last 4 years, and these people have some work on their hands in terms of getting things done. But we have some work also in terms of working with the administration to get some of this work done and to get it back up to the snuff of how the Justice Department and other agencies ought to be working to protect people.
Okay. Steve, calling from Bowie, last phone call. What's on your mind?
Hey, Harold. I totally agree with what you were saying earlier about you can't just walk into the Capitol and think it's you good. And let me tell you, I had experienced this, not me personally, but about 7 years ago, there was a woman, I think her name was Miriam Carey.
We were just talking about it.
I was just up the street, and she drove around, and she got fired on. Like, I mean, they shot at her like 12, 13, 14 times. Then they finally was like, oh, there's a baby in the car. And it was so fast, and I just thought, hold on a second. Y'all they had no problem taking care of her. And then, but yesterday, what I saw was just like a complete slap in the face. I'm like, hold on a second. I mean, when I had saw what happened down at the Capitol, you know, 8-9 years ago, it was like, you know, I mean, I think Obama was in office at the time too, but it was completely different. Yesterday, I saw them doing selfies, and I can't understand why they're not, these police officers aren't arrested. You know, so I just wanted to share that.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for your phone call. A final thought, a final question for you, Patrice. The president-elect called out the horrific optics of what we saw yesterday when compared to the Black Lives Matter protests and other social justice protests from last summer. Beyond having all of this ammunition to say, I told you so, where do we go beyond that?
Well, I think that we have a lot of work to do with respect to the bulk of policing that we see, which is the policing of Black people in D.C. especially. 90% of the time, that's who they're surveilling, that's who they're arresting, that's who they're prosecuting, that's who they're imprisoning. And that's where our focus at DC Justice Lab has been, is really thinking strategically about how do we place limits on police authority to engage in the kind of tactics that they've been engaging in our communities. And those are the people who are going to be most directly affected by policing. And I think that's where our energy belongs. And we've put forth some very specific proposals that I hope people will take a look at, and that I hope the council will take seriously as well.
Mm. Your final thought, Ron, where do we go from here?
Oh, I think, like Patrice, serving on this committee gives us an opportunity to work on the basic fundamental things that are going to make a difference where our people or Black folk. Let me be clear, where Black folk and Hispanic folk in this city don't have to be disgraced and embarrassed and beaten by the police, and or victimized by the practices of the police, but
in hope that the things that we work on are also going to address the systemic racism that exists in our society. Because policies and practices are okay, but if they don't go to address the fundamental problems that we have in our society, then people are still going to be victimized as a result of it.
As I said in the beginning, this discussion about enemies, foreign and domestic, certainly we saw domestic enemies yesterday, but because of what happened yesterday, we really need to make sure that we are aware of how our foreign enemies are seeing us.
That's right.
Because
that's
right now, we are vulnerable. And we may very well be vulnerable for the next 13 days. Just a guess. Mm-hmm. Patrice Sultan, I appreciate your time. Ron Hampton also. Also, we want to thank D.C. Ward 4 Councilmember Janice Lewis-George for spending some time with us. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, January 7th, 2021. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.